The thoughts, views, and opinions expressed on Group Chat are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of Buffalo Toronto Public Media, its leadership, or its affiliates. Enjoy the show.
Hello, welcome to Group Chat. Today, I'm Bentley, here with Nayula. You're probably wondering what we are wearing right now. Well, it's a clue into this episode. A very academically focused episode on wrestling.
Wrestling.
And we actually do have two academics.
We really do. If you thought that was like a joke, it was not. They actually know about wrestling.
Yes. Well, and Nayula, deeply. You know about the choreography aspect as well.
Yes.
So
yeah, yeah.
I am really excited to learn more about this. But really, when Nayula and I were carefully doing our research, we realized that we have our very own expert right here with us every week, Mr. Charles Gilbert.
Charles!
So I want to say he's the fact-checked Wikipedia of wrestling. The details this man knows.
Everything.
Everything. History. I am wearing a Miss Elizabeth and Macho Man Randy Savage shirt, which I'm sure we're going to get into that history. And Charles has actually allowed us, reluctantly, to wear his wrestling belts.
This is the baby's first wrestling experience.
Yes.
And I'm excited because I've never worn a wrestling belt before.
So. No. And they're heavy. He's probably not going to let us wear them for much longer.
Yeah, because they're collectible, so we can't mess them up, Bentley.
So, we're just going to get into the state of the scroll before we bring on our guests. Charles, what's going on this week?
We have a lot that's going on this week. Every time I say that, I feel like it's a fact. But before I could go any further, make sure you like, comment, and subscribe right here to this channel. If not, I'll make another PSA later on in the show. But let's dive into this state of the scroll, shall we? So Kanye West. Kanye West has released his highly anticipated album, Bully. But it seems like he is gaining a lot of traction, where I'm hearing a lot of people say that this is the return of the old Kanye. Music-wise,
okay,
I haven't
okay.
listened. I listened to one track on Bully, and I couldn't listen to it anymore. he was scheduled to headline Wireless Festival, which takes place in the UK. Drake did it last year, but several partners pulled their sponsorship from the festival. And apparently, the UK blocked Kanye from entering the country. So he will not be actually headlining this festival.
Were they surprised? I don't know that he just converted his thinking overnight.
Yeah, well, I'm just kind of surprised you would even bring him on. If you're going to, if it's that much of an issue, you couldn't have had any conversation where someone thought that was a good idea. And if you had all of them in a room that everyone said, this is a great idea, they all should probably be fired.
Well, I think it's because, you know, he did his sit down with the rabbi and did all this stuff, put his headline out on, was it Washington Post, I want to say, where he addressed, apologized, did all that stuff. So people were starting to say like, oh, he's changed.
Yeah, because he's got a new album coming out. That's why, I mean.
Well, yeah, but like, is he up on his, consistently on his medication? That's my question. I mean, you can change all day long, but your behavior may not. I can't see it. We got to see it.
And as far as like the music sounding, like I just noticed in the clips of the performance from LA, the auto-tune's back.
Auto-tune's back, and he was like flipping out about the lights that were clearly like preset before. Like, you don't ever go into any of those concerts like that not knowing like a set list of some sort, or like having some idea, especially him, because he's so into his creative
definitely
work.
A stickler for detail.
Yeah, he's so going on and off about like the lights. Like, okay, as he's starting the song, he's like, stop, I don't like those lights. Stop. And if people don't know lighting, it's not that easy to switch like that, especially concert lighting.
Yeah.
To change. And so it's like, so that for me, I was like, okay, we're not really consistent on our behavioral side of things. So
not at all. So moving on, Monday night, there was a shooting that took place in Florida with Migos rapper Offset. an arrest was made in connection with the shooting. But as we know, the internet's going to internet. And so many people had different conspiracies on how this happened. Some people were even saying Stephon Diggs had something to do with this, which was not the case. But
that's a stretch. The imagination on the internet is crazy.
Well, and I think the timing of everything, because the Cardi B connection.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it was just weird that Stephon Diggs had posted that video.
Well, that's
nothing in there about.
Well, that's the thing. Like, that wasn't, I mean, people are saying that, you know, that was an old video. People are saying that, you know, even when we watched the video, Bentley, it wasn't, he didn't say nothing.
No.
So, but people like to clicks and likes.
Or just read the headline.
Yes, yeah. Well, my bigger concern was like, why is Offset in a wheelchair smoking outside and he just got
smoking
shot?
Smoking his Newports.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like when you get shot, like maybe you shouldn't.
Maybe you shouldn't. But
be smoking. I don't know, maybe.
Then there's things going out now that are saying, oh, that's the look of a gambler because.
Well, they were saying that this had something to do with a debt that was.
Because he had what? From a casino, not in Florida, though, but it was $100,000 he owed another casino.
Yeah.
And who knows what he was doing that night because he got shot outside of a casino. So that's the other.
Yeah, like it's just
theory.
You owe people money and then they're trying to put him on notice that you better give them their money back.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Moving on to basketball because, I mean, we didn't really, these past few episodes, didn't talk about that much about basketball, Final Four, March Madness, everything. But I feel like this is everyone's favorite basketball coach, Dawn Staley.
Oh, yo, yes. It's my favorite. I'm tuned in March Madness.
Yeah, Dawn Staley and Gino Auriemma from UConn seem to be catching a lot of headlines, even after both teams are no longer in. South Carolina played UConn and beat them. And beat the brakes off of them. And during the post game, it was Gino and Dawn in a heated argument. And Gino basically went on and saying that tension started because she did not acknowledge during the pregame handshakes.
That was a lie. Gino.
And then said like the South Carolina players were roughing up their UConn's players because one of the players had their jersey ripped. That was a lie because she ripped her own jersey herself.
Yeah, I didn't even see when that would have happened in the game. Like, I didn't really
she
see
was off,
it.
It was after a play and she just like ripped it. It was nothing like that happened during the game that they were getting, you know, too physical with each other.
Yeah. So since then, Gino's released a statement. He actually released it yesterday stating that the two coaches have talked and are moving on with this matter. And I quote, "I apologize to Dawn, her staff, and her team. I lost more games in Final Four than any coach in history. But Friday, I lost something more important. I lost myself."
Please stop, Gino. Stop. Stop. You've been coaching too long, and he likes to pick on women. This is not his first time going against coaches because you and your feelings about whatever the case may be. First of all, UConn had a great season. Mm-hmm. They were undefeated. So I don't understand the problem. Like, are you mad because you lost? And like him and Dawn go back. Like, he was her coach when they played in the Olympics together. Like, you know, Dawn is known Gino for forever. And aren't they both from Philly? Which I was like, I need you to do a better. You need to select better who you're going to start getting in fights with because,
yeah,
Dawn was going in.
Yeah. He didn't know. What did he think? She was just going to back away and be like, yeah, you're right.
Why are you screaming? The game is over. Like, why are you yelling? Why are you yelling at Dawn? Dawn didn't do anything.
And then he said something about her, how she is in the locker room, and they showed her in the locker room with her players, and there was none of that was said, whatever he was saying.
I watched a podcast with Candace Parker, and she played Tennessee with Pat, and she was saying how she doesn't like Gino because Pat didn't like Gino and how Gino doesn't take losing lightly. And he's a sore loser pretty much. Like, he did this with Pat and that's why them two didn't get along. So Gino just, I mean, it was a bad look definitely was. I was disappointed that he did that because I'm just like, come on now, like the better person won. But then I looked at it and I hate to flip the card, but I was like, if the shoe was on the other foot and Dawn reacted like that, like Gino did, everybody would be like,
oh, he would have lost it.
You know, but I'm just saying how the media would kind of,
oh, yeah, yeah,
they would all be sure. Like, yo, like this is classless, just like Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, true.
Once the shoe's on the other foot, it's a whole different situation. So I actually want to get your thoughts on this, Nyla, this one in particular.
Oh, yeah.
NSYNC's dance choreographer is filing a lawsuit against Sony as Darren Henson is accusing Sony Music of licensing the dance for both Marvel Studios' 2024 Deadpool and Wolverine and Epic Games' Fortnite without his permission or giving him credit for the NSYNC Bye 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 choreography.
So this is really interesting because similar to how you have copyright and music and different things, dance does not necessarily have that. So, you know, we don't, like, there's certain groups that might have trust, like the New York City Ballet or an Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. But when it comes individually, it gets really tricky. You're not supposed to take dance steps, like step by step by step. So you can be inspired by something, but it will be interesting to see what happens because on the books, there's really not laws for dance specifically. There's a great book called Choreograph and Copyright that covers like the history of this. But back in the day, I assisted Darren Henson, you know, back in the day at dance conferences. Ain't no lie, bye, bye, bye. And we won the Stomp the Yard competition, actually, like a bunch of us from Buffalo. So that's, you can look that up.
What is?
Early 2000s. Stomp the Yard. He choreographed Stomp the Yard. And we had to like learn all the step routines and you put it in. You got like a movie, free movie premiere if you won.
Who did the Chris Brown?
Oh, who did the Chris Brown? Oh, I have to go back and find the video. Maybe we can add it into the into the slides afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know you had that direct connection.
I did. And so I know his feeling because he takes a lot of time. He like takes his choreography very seriously. But not only that, it won an MTV Music Choreography Award. So that's where I think he can kind of push some things because it's, I mean, he's award winning for that work. And you know, similar, we need better copyright laws for dance, specifically because it happens all the time. And in different countries around the world, particularly in different Asian countries, it's seen as like a sign of respect to take choreography. But we don't see that here in the U.S. So you shouldn't be able to just take someone's stuff verbatim, like step by step by step that they choreograph. And so this will be an interesting case.
And that's such a famous dance, like, even if you weren't an NSYNC fan, you know that dance.
Like, well, it's not. Well, the difference is, it's like it wasn't a viral dance. That was a dance specifically made for a music video for a group that went on tour that everybody knows. It's not like a TikTok dance.
Yeah.
And I think Deadpool thought it was TikTok, and it's not.
Ah.
So
interesting.
So Darren might get his little coin. He's acting now. He hasn't really danced, you know, that much anymore, choreographing, but. You know, I hope he wins.
You have me thinking about that TikTok scenario, too, though, with dances and
oh, yeah, we need a
copyright.
Whole episode
yeah,
on people
okay, well,
TikToks and stuff, too. That's a whole to be continued.
To be continued.
Put a pin in that one. Speaking of choreography, dance, all that good stuff, we are less than 2 weeks away from Michael Jackson's biopic.
I can't wait.
I got my tickets already.
Come on, Charles. I gotta get mine.
I know.
I'm seeing it Thursday, 7 o'clock.
Noah is so excited. We were just watching Mario Kart in the movie theater, and the trailer came on for Michael Jackson. He's like, yes, let's go.
So, there's been a lot of reports and news coming out lately. One of the biggest ones is that this may possibly be a multi biopic. So. There is reports that if this movie globally gross $700 million, they will greenlight part two. I think that's going to gross $7 million globally less than a month. That's what I think.
Yeah. We're putting your prediction on record now because I agree.
So that's that. Then there's also the big controversy over the supposed $15 million reshoot that they had to do. They had to do the reshoot because they did speak on the child abuse allegations in the movie. And they had to.
Oh, because of the estate?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't play about that. It was the same with the Broadway show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They keep, you know, they keep stuff kind of tight.
So.
Well, we shall see and we shall expect your review. I'm going to try to go.
You got to go, Bentley, because we got to talk about it.
I know. I'm going to try to go on Friday.
Okay.
I don't know if I'll make Thursday. So don't ruin it for me, Charles.
I'm not ruining nothing.
You like to give spoilers.
Here's the thing. How can you ruin a Michael Jackson biopic?
I know.
We already saw it on VH1 in the 90s.
Yeah.
So that's all we have for this week's State of the Scroll.
That was pretty deep, Charles. And then we will get into in the next segment what Charles is wearing and why. and we will introduce a couple of our guests. I'm really excited because Naila is so clutch because she's got friends in all places
in the university
community. And I am just really excited to have Arrow Lane, who is an associate professor at the University at Buffalo, and we'll tell you more about him as well. And John Torrey, he's been on group chat before, also an associate professor at Buff State. So we're going to dive into wrestling, including with Charles, the expert, as well, next on group chat.
Public media keeps our community talking and thinking together. Hear perspectives that matter on BTPM NPR. Experience meaningful stories on BTPM PBS. Enjoy performances that connect us on BTPM Classical and discover new voices on BTPM The Bridge. These are conversations that shape our region and open our world. This is Public Media. Visit btpm.org.
Welcome back to Group Chat. Bentley, Naila, we are...
I'm trying to hold it together because I'm looking at Charles right now.
I don't know if you guys can see him, but I'm freaking out right now. He also took the belts away from Naila and myself because he doesn't trust us. but we have some displayed on the table. We are diving into wrestling. Finally, we've been saying we're going to do this episode. And we have some wrestling events coming up and also WrestleMania. Mania, right? Okay.
We're going to get in trouble for saying all the wrong stuff.
But I'm just so excited about having some academics here.
Yes.
So Arrow Lane, associate professor at University of Buffalo in Department of Theater and Dance, and also author of the book Professional Wrestling and the Commercial Stage. Welcome. And John Torrey, you have been here before with us.
Yes.
Welcome back. Associate professor at Buff State in Philosophy and Africana Studies. And also, I hear you know a little bit about wrestling in that realm, too. So
I got a few decades of time.
And what shirt are you wearing underneath that sweater?
My Ric Flair shirt, 16-time World Heavyweight Champion. You know, you got to rep appropriately.
I know you were liking my Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth shirt. It is my husband's, but Charles knows more about What is going on?
People can see us on YouTube, but for those who can't, Charles is fully decorated right now.
In a goat head? This is like a bad horror movie. Charles, can you talk in that thing?
Yeah, I can talk.
Okay, yeah, you can.
I can talk. So,
can you explain this setup you have?
I will. Okay. I will. And I got to take the headphones off for a minute because I have to. This is okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me find my camera right there. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I need y'all to understand what I am wearing right now is a symbolization of arguably the greatest wrestler of this generation, Roman Reigns, the tribal chief, the head of the table, the needle mover. Greatness on a different level, okay? He will be going up against CM Punk at WrestleMania to take the world title from Phil, okay? That's why I'm wearing this mask. Because last time I had this mask on, he beat Brock Lesnar. He unified those titles that's on the table right there. That's why I have this mask on. That's why I'm wearing the Ulafala. Because in the podcast world, I am the podcast tribal chief. Thank you.
Go in, Charles. All right.
Yeah, do y'all agree with this? Is this the best, greatest wrestler?
longest running title, the longest running champion since like Hogan in the 80s, I think.
1,316 days.
Yes, and of many of those days, I was hoping he would lose. And he kept on winning. So I got to be honest, he's needle movers right. But there have been so many really good people in the last number of years that he squashed, that got to get that stepped on. If you ignore Daniel Bryan in the last generation, I think we're missing somebody. If we're ignoring AJ Styles in the last generation, I think we're missing somebody. And unfortunately, they didn't get the same shine. If we're ignoring CM Punk in the last 20 years, I think we're missing somebody. Needle mover is needle mover. I can't front, Charles. I don't want to get hit with Duma Fala, so there's that too.
Arrow. What's
well, Roman Reigns hasn't had a good, I mean, he's had a time of it. If you look at his career, right? The crowd was not always behind him.
Was
right?
not.
Yeah.
Was not.
Because the, so in wrestling, right? Like there's this, this like,
that's right. Okay.
Can you break it down for the novice people over it. Here?
Well, I mean, I'll defer to the real Roman Reigns expert here. But I mean, I do remember, so in wrestling, right, there's often this narrative of like the producers, the WWE executives being the bad guys in some ways, right? And this, we can see this back for a few decades. And so for a while, Roman Reigns was being pushed as like, he was the guy.
He was getting pushed to be the next John Cena.
Yep.
Which means that people didn't like that. They were like, "Yeah, don't you tell me who I want to root for and who's the best." And this was a real, that was tough. So he's really overcome that in a lot of ways.
But John Cena was like a good guy in wrestling, right?
John Cena has always been a good guy.
A good guy. So, but this guy that you're as on your shirt doesn't look like the wholesome John Cena.
He's not.
I literally, when he saw, all I far saw was the hair. It. I was like, is that the Undertaker? I know. I was like growing up. I was
far from it.
No. And you know, I hated that he beat Taker at WrestleMania. That saddened me.
But I think the three of us can probably, I will say, the greatest storyline in this modern day, it was the Bloodline storyline that was a 4-year run that technically is still going on right now. It's just not layered like it was because Roman's not really actively involved in a lot of the story.
So what is the Bloodline storyline?
The Bloodline storyline consists of the Anoa'i family, which is the Polynesian Samoan family. So you have the Wild Samoans, which is Afa and Sika. They are the father and uncle to Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns has the Usos, which is his cousins, which is sons of Rikishi, who has another son, Solo. The Rock is in there, too, because The Rock is the grandson of the High Chief, Peter Maivia. I'm probably going to send Bailey a picture of the actual family tree, because they do have it. Of
so
that.
The Rock is his brother.
No, The Rock is his cousin.
Cousin.
Okay.
But they're all in the same bloodline.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
So my son, all three of them, but one specifically, Noah, is obsessed with wrestling and playing with like wrestling toys.
Yes.
So this is a question for both of you. How does that like legacy of wrestling still kind of filter into like this younger generation? Because I used to do it only just because I had brothers and so they used to fight and I had to defend myself. So I would pretend I was China because I was the only woman at the time.
That was the only one I had at the time.
So I was like China and then they were doing whatever and we were doing like the suck it and my mom would get mad because it was inappropriate in public. But it's still happening now with little kids. Like what is that of like wrestling that gets younger generations or all generations to really enjoy it?
Well, they stopped the suck it a little bit, so that may have
yeah, especially on the screen at the matches. Yeah.
Right. Well, WWE went TV PG time ago, and that's also in relation to the fact that they were a publicly traded company. Okay. So they're competing with Disney in their mind, right? Like, so like Disney doesn't say such things. So they're like, well, maybe
we should tone it down.
Yeah.
Another part to that is we mentioned John Cena earlier. He was the top babyface, the top good guy in the company for about 20 years. He's selling merchandise. He's reaching out to the kids. He's someone who they identify with. He's their hero. He's got the hustle, loyalty, respect, the mottos that are similar to the eat your vitamins and do your and say your prayers and train. The same sort of appeal still works. And again, as they went to TVPG, the model for who they were trying to have their primary consumer went from being like the 18 to 34-year-old man to the child, which
to the families,
right, to the family itself, which sucks now because they're not doing that great with the ticket prices. They have outpriced a lot of families with WrestleMania.
Yeah,
but
that's because of the deal, because they are Endeavor now. They're TKO.
Yeah.
So and TKO is all about money. Yeah. They're not about, like, a lot of people feel like if Vince McMahon was still doing this, those ticket prices would not be the way they were. They won't even be in Vegas again because they went to Vegas back to back.
I think you're right. McMahon ran in a different, horrifyingly, but he would have ran it financially in a different way. Yeah.
But even going back to John Cena, at one time, I think he still is, was the high, the most active and highest of the most amount of Make-A-Wish events for kids, which that made me like him more. I mean, listen, I don't know anything about any of this. I see it sometimes. My husband is obsessed. So I would like to talk about that angle.
Of adult men.
The grown men. I found a new soft spot for him because, and these kids like, worship that. That's a big deal to them.
Yeah. Have you watched any of the videos?
They're tearjerkers.
I know. They're really, you just cry. Like, I feel like everybody's crying.
He seems like genuinely like a good person. Yeah.
And that's been his, that's been both his character and who he is, right? I mean, John Cena has just been the, you know, there's in wrestling, there's faces and heels. Faces are the good guys, heels are the bad guys. And John Cena has just been a face in and out of the ring, right?
Yeah. Cody Rhodes is now taking up that mantle. So I imagine for a lot of kids, that same sort of fervor and passion that you would see for Cena, say, a decade ago, you'll probably see that now with the current top good guy in the company, which is Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, because they create, the baby faces create, I mean, wrestling in general creates this sense of, like, we have emotion towards the people. Like, people, when The Rock came back for WrestleMania 40, and he beat the brakes off of Cody backstage, everything. They were showing video of kids crying because in their world, Maui from Moana, because that's how they look at him, they look at The Rock as Maui, is beating up on...
Oh, yeah, they don't understand The Rock.
No, and they're like, why is he doing this? And that's the emotional attachment.
I'm going to cry right now.
I remember when I was a kid and Shawn Michaels, which at the time was my favorite wrestler, fought Psycho Sid.
Survivor Series 96.
Garden, in the Garden.
Yep.
Arrow, you're nodding your head as well. The author and academic over here. But hearing you all talk about this, right, I'm thinking about character development.
Yes.
That is what seems to suck people in, whether it's a grown man that gets invested into storylines and it's an escape at the end of the day, whether it's a little kid playing with wrestling toys. So how do these characters come about? I mean, where did this all start? I
refer to you.
Well, I mean, the characters, they're built by the wrestlers and developed by the wrestling promoters and companies. This is what's great about wrestling. I mean, I was nodding because, like, everyone has, like, kind of a memory of wrestling, right? I mean, you remember The Undertaker and being giant, right? Like, there's a connection there that it's different than many other performance forms, I would say, right? It's closer to sports in some ways. Like, maybe you remember a World Series you saw or a Super Bowl or something like that. And so that's where these pay-per-views really just sort of lodge themselves in people's memories and experiences. It's the characters that really bring it to life there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, pay-per-view. I forgot about that.
It's so interesting. So Errol was my graduate professor in school. And so this is how I learned about the performance of wrestling. Because I was like, oh, this is a thing. Because he had his partner and they were like doing research. I was like, oh, people do research on this. And I found how difficult it is because you have like you have your athletics, which is one way and like people can talk about that in entertainment. There's a whole nother skill set of like actually having to know the technique of wrestling and then performance. And then there's like this acting component to it, which is like, that's really impressive.
Yeah.
And I gained a lot from that. I was like, oh, that is more than I thought. Just like kind of watching TV and them just like going. But like they could really, I mean, you could really get hurt if you don't. Like it's like it's, you know, choreographed in that way.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk to the somebody from a local wrestling company about that. And like somebody that's actually been in the ring too. Because, yeah, it's very dramatic. And even when you're live, you actually hear those sounds and everything. And it's pretty dramatic. John, you are also a philosophy professor. So
that's what they tell me.
What is the philosophy behind the current wrestling world or
let's see here.
No, I mean, you know what I'm saying? There is to people that don't watch it maybe or just think it's this like theatrical, you know, fake thing. There's a whole nother level to
it's
it.
Yes, I'm about to thank you, Charles. That's someone's gonna throw something at their screen right now.
I know. Listen, I'm the instigator this episode, Charles, because you're
I thought it was fake too until Arrow showed me it was not.
Good. That's the important part. Showed you it was not. Yeah. We don't use that word.
It's theatrical though, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah.
So if I'm thinking what is the, we'll call it like the tenor of the modern day wrestling fan and the experience, it's still based on, can you get them to feel? If you can get them to feel, you'll get them to watch, you'll get them to participate. And there's a lot more fan investment now, a lot more fan participation. So in the 90s, you're writing postcards and stuff to your favorite wrestler and, you know, you're sending fan mail. Now you can tweet them and now you can Facebook them. You can follow them. You can comment on their posts. You can have direct engagement in a way that, you feel that much more invested because you want to see your person win.
Yeah.
I think about Zack Ryder about a decade ago. He was basically relegated to the mid-card scene. He wasn't seen as, say, a trusted hand that could be a moneymaker. Well, the fans online loved him. And he did a great job promoting himself online, had his own. He was one of the first wrestlers to have their own podcast for all intents and purposes. And because of that fan investment, the company ended up having to give him some success. And that kind of fan-driven relationship has always been the backbone of pro wrestling. It's gotten that much more exposed, we might say, that's really how the foundation operates. And that's also where you're getting backlash when you see people online not happy with what's going on screen. It's very different direct response, and the companies have to respond to them because not enough good press is horrible press, and too much bad press can shut you down. And like any good company, they want to see successful material on the screen. And the only way they get that is if the fans are going, we love it.
Yeah.
Well, in the arena, right? Like you get positive and negative feedback immediately if you're a wrestler in the arena, right? I mean, it'd be like if you could go to a Broadway show and if you started booing, it would change the plot, right? Like, like things would change on, or if you cheered in a way, like things would change, right? And that's what happens in the wrestling stadium, like in the live event.
And as you have both kind of mentioned, and I know your book is kind of centered around some of these things, Arrow is the commercial aspect of it and the response. Have you seen it over the years change directions because of that commercial response or audience response?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to understand how live event money-making works, you should pay attention to pro wrestling. At the core of wrestling event is the live experience, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, like during the pandemic, there were these empty stadium matches, which were weird. Like, it was weird to watch wrestling without people cheering and chanting and clapping along. I think the business of wrestling is very close to the business of theater, the business of dance, of performance.
Oh, yeah. Magnified.
Yeah. Right.
Because, like, they're usually telling a story, and this is, like, multiple, like, stories back to back.
Yeah, it's a serial form. Yeah.
WrestleMania 23 was my first time going to a WrestleMania, and there was a woman who was next to me who was working at the building. She wasn't in the wrestling. She's watching the Batista versus Undertaker World Heavyweight title match, and she's like, this is fake. This is all malarkey. The crowd's responding. Everyone's going. And so there was a near fall, a one, two, and a kick out, and she was, oh! And I looked over, and I was like, see, we got you. Right? Like, you're hooked. But that's the magic, right? You can't find that anyplace else.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to get more into the choreography and the theatrics. with a wrestler from the local community. And John unfortunately has to leave us because he's got to go teach a class. John Torrey is a busy guy.
They tell me I'm a professor, so I should go do the teaching.
Yeah. And Arrow, you don't mind sticking around for this next segment?
I can stick around.
Okay. All right. That's up next on Group Chat.
Calling all storytellers in kindergarten through third grade. The Buffalo Toronto Public Media PBS Kids Writers Contest is back. Here are the details for parents, caregivers, and educators. Kid writers from Western New York and Southern Ontario can send us their stories until March 31st for a chance to win prizes and be featured in a celebration live streamed from our studios. Don't wait. Visit btpm.org/writerscontest to submit your entry today.
Welcome back to Group Chat, Bentley.
Nayla.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about wrestling today in a very academic way. And we are, if you have been here, Charles has taken the belts away from Nayla and me. He was very reluctant to let us wear these fancy wrestling belts, but now he did for a minute.
Yep.
And now they're on the table. So, and Charles has removed the goat mask because I cannot sit here and be scared the whole time. But you still have, what's the necklace again?
Ulafala.
Yes, that is still being worn. So if you're listening, we're setting the stage here for you. And we are joined again by Errol Lane, who is an associate professor at University at Buffalo, Department of Theater and Dance, and author of the book Professional Wrestling and the Commercial Stage. And we're excited to be joined by Andrew Reimers, who is a ring announcer for Empire State Wrestling. And they have an event coming up, so we will talk more about that. But we would like, we're excited to have you in terms of being actually in the scene and being, you know, around the wrestlers and part of the whole fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me on here. I've loved hearing the talk so far, and it's been great meeting everybody and being able to chat wrestling even off the air. But yes, you use the word scene, and I think that's the perfect way to put it, because wrestling for me has always been there. Mm-hmm. And it's WWF, NWA, WCW back in those days. But independent wrestling is what really speaks to me. I guess I've always been sort of one for the underdog. Mm-hmm. And whether it was music, that was something where it was always about underground music, underground scenes. And the grind that I see from these wrestlers, the miles on the road, the toll on their bodies, the creativity, it's the best of everything from music to theater to dance to any kind of performance. And to be in the thick of it now at this point in my life is wild.
Yeah. Well, so you're a ring announcer, and Charles, our resident expert, has explained to me the importance of ring announcing, and some of the famous ring announcers. I've been binging clips. Who did you show me yesterday, Charles?
So I showed Bentley Samantha Irvin.
Oh, Samantha Irvin.
She
I love her style because she brought that guttural, throaty, rock star front person energy that I like to bring to ring announcing. But when I grew up, it was guys like Howard Finkel. Coming down the aisle, you know, the very classic boxing, combat sports type announcement. But now, you know, Samantha Irvin is a prime example of the style that I love to try to emulate.
Yeah, because basically, like, the way she introduced the wrestlers, she incorporated different things with them. So, like, when it was Gunther, she emphasized that. When it was Luger Kaiser, she would, because the way Luger would walk out, he was very fluent, like very, like, looked like man was walking on water, smooth. Mm. She made it like that. Giovanni Vinci, she was brought that Italian out of her. And just how she did it. And I showed Bentley the WrestleMania 40 introduction with Cody and Roman, and how she was just so passionate with that. And then when Cody won, and the emotion that came behind it, she was like, is she crying? I was like, because you get invested behind this story, especially Cody's story, because, you know, son of Dusty.
Yes.
Dusty won the title, but didn't. he was the only Rhodes to win the title, and he won it from, unfortunately, he beat Roman Reigns.
Well, I mean, but I feel like we need to get a sample, Nayla. Like,
yes.
We need to hear it. So would we be putting you on the spot, Andrew, if you did a little sample of what you do in the ring?
I'd be happy to do it. I kind of expected that. So, all right, let's see. Hailing from the city of good neighbors, she is the undisputed voice of Buffalo Radio and your Buffalo Toronto public media radio champion of the world. She is Bentley.
Wow.
Wow. Now, I did not expect that. And I was the one that, like, pushed him to do it. So I thought he was going to talk
always
about a
ready.
Wrestler.
Always ready.
Always ready.
Always ready. That was amazing.
That actually kind of touches on what you were talking about, Nayla, about wrestling and the, you know, the creativity behind it, but mm-hmm. always, like, being able to pivot, right?
Yeah.
The creativity is my favorite because I'm going to hit on a sore subject for maybe some of your listeners, but I come from a music background and performance, mm-hmm. and that was a big part of my life for a long time. And it's something I got away from, and there's this celebration sort of cover bands, right, in the Buffalo music scene. And that's, I digress, I don't want to get into that. But
yeah, no, because I'll go off on that too.
But my favorite thing about wrestling is that these wrestlers are writing a new song in that ring every single night with their style of communication, their style, their creativity coming to the forefront and creating a unique experience every single time. You know, I like to joke with people about, you're never going to see two wrestlers go in the ring and say, like, hey, here's our rendition of Stone Cold versus Bret Hart at WrestleMania
13. I was actually going to ask about that.
You might be inspired by it. There might be bits and pieces that you might take to put a match together. But when I see what these, especially the students, so I attend the Buffalo Wrestling Academy mm-hmm. in DePue with coaches Vince Valor, Invincible Vince Valor, Rockstar Robbie Vegas, Dan Joseph, and to learn the ins and outs and the minute little details that you don't have to be a hardcore wrestling fan to realize that you're getting a story within a story within a story. Every facial expression, mm-hmm. every body movement, every way they pick the other guy up off the mat, it has a meaning, it has a reason. And that's the story that's being told. And I think it is told as well as it's told on the big platforms in WWE, AEW. To see what they do in total nonstop action wrestling and to see these stories that are told on the independent level is just so inspiring because I get to live my dream by watching wrestling ringside, but I'm watching these guys and men and women and folks who pour their hearts, their souls, all of their energy and sacrifice so much to do this for a living. And it blows my mind. I respect them all so much. I love it. I live the dream.
Like a headlock isn't just a headlock, right?
No.
Like
is telling a whole story there that's yes. connected to sometimes weeks, months, yes. years of buildup to get to that one single, sometimes very stationary move.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I just picked a rather unspectacular something. Right?
Yeah.
This isn't someone jumping off a ladder. It's not someone like.
It doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be exactly. Emotional. Yeah.
So you're saying, Errol, those moves are very connected when they're to the story.
Yeah.
Those moves mm-hmm. themselves are part of the story and help tell the story.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what you're saying.
Right? Yeah. Like, knowing that, you know, a guy is. You're going to work his leg because he's that much bigger than you. And the only way that people are going to believe the story is if somebody this small, David versus Goliath, he's going to attack the leg. He's going to work the knee. He's going to go low with the chop block, bring him down to his height. And that's all part of the storytelling.
What is work the leg?
Like
attack the leg.
Like, you know, twist the knee, kick the...
Yeah, okay. Just making sure in case people out there don't know. I'm like, hey, I'm trying to...
But just like there's different genres in music, you know, somebody, you know, you might like rock music, but like, you know, you either like Nickelback or you don't, right?
Right.
I know that's cliche example, but...
We keep getting into these controversial topics.
I know.
That's another...
Nickelback is controversial.
But it doesn't mean that, you know, there aren't amazing bands, maybe even doing it better at Mohawk Place compared to somebody who might be playing the arena.
Right,
the music
that's
scene.
A good comparison. And, you know, Arrow, you've traveled around too and written about wrestling. Do you see differences in other areas? You've traveled to Europe also as well and observed some of that culture.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I like about wrestling is you can jump in. Like, if you know the form, like, it's there, right? Yeah. I mean, and there are, you know, I mean, there are very strong and wrestling traditions in Japan, in Mexico, the U.S., Canada, Australia. I mean, like, you go out into the world and there is professional wrestling. And the thing that's really fantastic is if you show up to a wrestling match and you don't know the language, we'll understand what's happening, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a physical language in the ring that happens. So to me, like, this is just what's amazing about wrestling is you can always just, like, once you watch it a little bit, you can jump back in just about any time.
Yeah. Like, and I know that we were talking about fight choreography when we were talking about Sinners.
Yeah.
So can you explain that a little bit, too? Because I know you teach theater and dance, Arrow, and obviously that's your world, Naila. But what does that actually entail when you're watching a fight scene and fight choreography? Yeah.
You're in the training rooms, but
we'll get your take on that too.
Yeah.
But fight choreography in theater is different in a way because there's just less contact.
People aren't
actually falling down, right? And you know, and some people will say, "Well, that's because actors have a union. Wrestlers don't, right?"
Yeah.
I mean, there's something to that. But it's just a different genre and a different form with wrestling. You know, probably being closer to circus in some ways, just in terms of the acrobatics and or maybe more. Or closer to like stunts rather than like sword fighting in Hamlet or something, right? Although, you know, wrestlers do nap and they clap. Yeah.
It has its right. I'm just thinking everyone's going to just roast me and exposing everything. No, you bring up a great point, and I know that in theater and movies and television, especially in theater, when there's a choreographed fight scene, you're doing that fight scene the same every single night, 36 times in 6 weeks.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, wrestlers don't necessarily have that same ability. Now, you know, there's something to be said for traveling around the country and doing the same match with a guy, you know, like back in the territory days. But the, you know, I think the big difference is that you're in most cases, they calling it on the fly. They're in the ring talking to each other. You brought up, you know, somewhat of a mundane hold with a headlock. But that headlock is not only telling a story outwardly to the crowd, knowing that this guy's in control, the other guy's got to fight back, you know, whatever story is happening. But there's also a story happening between those two people in the ring that they're communicating. How is this going to go? Is it based off the crowd reaction? How are they accepting what we're doing? Are we going to pivot? Are we going to do this next? Are we going to do this next? It's really just fascinating, the amount of communication that goes into it. I don't know how they do it, and I've seen behind the curtain at Oscar. and I still don't quite fully understand how they do it.
Did Bills fans steal table slamming from wrestling?
Yes.
I have to, like, give props where they're due. You know, I have to. That was the inspiration, right? Okay.
Yes. Get the tables.
So from promoting, though, is also a big thing in wrestling.
Yes.
In the promos. And so there is an art to that as well. So, Era, what do you see? What have you seen as far as the most successful promotions in the commercial world? And then I would like to find out from you as well about, Andrew, about how you promote with the more independent wrestling.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know about the most successful, but I mean, I think today, or if you want to look across a career and you look at, I would say, look at Paul Heyman. Like, if you're just wanting to see like what a promoter does and can do in terms of promos as well in ring and out of ring, like, I mean, people will disagree, but I think like Paul Heyman is one of the, is just simply one of the best promoters in the world. Just like in terms of, just the way that he's representing his quote unquote clients and the characters, his own sort of character in the ring. So, I mean, I guess if I had to rank a personal kind of I'll watch Paul Heyman all the time. Yeah.
What is the role of the promoter? Just for people that don't,
go ahead.
understand.
You might know Andrea Ian better.
You take that one, and then we're going to go over to you so you can actually promote your event that's coming up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, the promoter is the person who like promotes the event. And, I mean, I give the example of Paul Heyman because Paul Heyman's actually a character of in Paul Heyman in a way, right? Like, he was a wrestling promoter, and then his company was purchased by WWE, and he became Paul Heyman. So he and a lot of promoters end up, in terms of their character, end up being those sort of personal ring announcer for the wrestlers themselves. And they're just like the hype guy, right?
Yeah.
That's what they're there to do. Like drum up interest, whether good or bad, right? Like,
yeah.
I think the only major difference that I would add on to that from like a WWE and a national and international scale is the promoter in an independent scene might, you know, they're able to put on the shows, but it's up to everybody, much like in other performance business, like you got to get people in the seats. So it's up to every individual wrestler to make sure, you know, it isn't one man at the top who's dictating storylines. Yeah. It's everybody coming together and promoting the show because everybody benefits when we maximize and we get the butts in the seats, right?
Yeah. Well, so on that note, you have an event coming up, Andrew, at Buffalo River Works.
We do. Yes. So ESW, Empire State Wrestling, presents Brawl Fest 2026, Friday, May 8th. At Buffalo River Works.
Yeah. All right. We might have to go check that out. Yeah. You better not take your boys though, because they're already
fighting and like I'm worried about broken arms and legs.
Hold on, before you make your decision, let me run down some of what's going on here.
Okay.
So it's 6 p.m. doors, 7 o'clock bell time. We are going to have a tag team gauntlet match to determine the new ESW tag team champions. They had to be relinquished due to Colin Delaney's injury, unfortunately. We're going to find out what's next for the submission suplex machine, Spencer Slade, the NWA junior heavyweight champion, after his vicious attack on our champion, Gregory Iron, last show. The oldest active professional wrestler in the world, Action Mike Jackson, is going to be taking on the grown-ass man, Jack Isaac, who is a cocky little jerk. So it's going to be the old-ass man versus the grown-ass man. Sorry, I know it's like 11 in the morning on NPR. Things are going to get hardcore as Mr. Hardcore, Channing Decker, teams up with the innovator of violence, Tommy Dreamer, from the original ECW and WWE, TNA and all that, taking on Groff, the Native Wolf, the hottest new tag team in ESW, Criterion, and they're accompanied by the Agent of Chaos, Brian DeVille, unfortunately. Also in action, big-time Bill Collier, the Atrocity Cruel, the two-year ESW Women's Champion, Christina Marie, is going to be in action.
Yeah, awesome. Christina.
Vince Valor, James Segar, Interstate Champion, Chris Cooper, Gavin Glass, so much more. I wanted to let you know that everybody here, I want you to come as my guest. So I want you to come to the show. Be our guest on May 8th. We would love to have you. You'll be on the list, not Jericho's list, but you'll be on the list. And thank you so much for having me. Thank you for
letting
us promote.
That's amazing. And if you want to learn more about wrestling, professional wrestling in the commercial stage, so Arrow's book is available called Professional Wrestling in the Commercial Stage. And you can become just as informed as everybody in this room. So we look forward to, we got to do more with you all.
Yes.
We got to figure it. I can't with you, Charles. Charles is back. Mask. Charles is going to wrap it up for us today.
Okay. Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe to this Acknowledge group chat.
Thanks for joining us.